Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Benyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and welcome to the show. Yesterday, I happened to call in to another talk show in Denver on KHOW, and it was Peter Boyle's program. Is he the number one morning talk show host in Colorado? I think he is. And KOA might beat him out, but Peter Boyles is the big news talk call-in talk show in the Rocky Mountain region. And he was talking about the tragedy of two women in Colorado who have just recently killed their own babies. What a just a horrendous tragedy, and something that happens with far too great a frequency in America. And I think the reason it happens so commonly is that the women who kill their children typically don't get severely punished. And I called into Peter's show and mentioned to him a New York Times article. He was, I think, blurring the issue, as he often does, trying to downplay right and wrong, sin and evil, and only being willing to talk about mental illness. And, you know, the one woman who killed her child in a bar, went into the bathroom. She was high on drugs, went into the bathroom, delivered her baby, killed the baby, and went back out to the bar. And then her and her friends left, went home, and then went out again to another bar. And so he said, you know, you got to be mentally ill to do something like this. And obviously she was high on drugs. But, you know, people sometimes, if they want to kill something or do something wrong, they'll often get high to some extent to be able to try to pull off this thing that they're doing that normally they'd have a hard time doing. So if some guy wants to kill someone, and he drinks a few beers first, so what is his defense? I was drunk. So at any rate, by the way, our phone number is 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. What I wanted to do was disentangle the issue of mental illness from the issue of right and wrong. And Peter Boyles was saying, eventually we'll see that this is all mental illness. And so I was able to get through, and I asked him, well, I said, Peter, surely it wasn't mental illness that moved the editors of the New York Times to publish an opinion piece back in 1997 that the piece was arguing for the legalization of infanticide, of killing babies. And Peter denied that such an article could possibly exist. And so I have it here in front of me, the New York Times, November 2nd, 1997, the Sunday edition. And the title of the article was Why They Kill Their Newborns by Steven Pinker. And at the time this article came out, a couple months later, we read the article on the air. We read the entire article and became rather angry that the New York Times would publish an opinion piece that advocated killing children after they're born. And the Rocky Mountain News, to their credit, ran an editorial condemning the New York Times, this New York Times article. But for the most part, the country just utterly ignored this, the paper of record, and what they did here by publishing this letter. So I'm going to read to you either this entire article or excerpts from it. We'll decide as we go. But we'll take one call first, and only one call, from St. Angelo, Texas, Jason, speak your mind.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Doing great, thanks.
What are we talking about today?
Jason, you called. You tell me.
Oh, okay. Well, we don't get your show. We have to listen to you over the internet, so we're always a couple of days behind.
But... All right. Well, I'm thrilled you called in. I'm about to read an article in the New York Times that argued for the legalization of infanticide.
Legalization of infanticide?
Yeah, killing babies after they're born.
These people are crazy. How late can we kill them?
Yeah, well, they didn't specify an exact time, but sometime after
years,
they're born.
20 years?
After they're
years?
Born, but not until for months. But anyway, so what's up, Jason?
Well, we just wanted to call you and tell you some time ago we bought some of your stuff.
Yeah.
And we're just really enjoying it.
I'm thrilled to hear that.
Yeah, we're getting through the plot. And actually, my wife and I were arguing about who gets to read it because we only bought one of those. We bought a whole bunch of other stuff.
You're too much. So so you guys bought a lot of our material. We got videos, audio.
Yeah, you got something called the library.
The Enyart Library.
Yeah, you guys should, you know.
Did you
I
buy
think
a
should get that.
You bought a copy of the Enyart Library?
Yeah, we bought only one copy of the Enyart Library.
Only one copy. You're
one
so
copy.
Funny. That's everything we have.
Is it?
That's about 80 titles, 100 titles. I don't know that. Probably 80 or so different.
Well, it was in a really big box, let me tell you.
Oh, my. Jason, God bless you, and thank you so much for doing that and supporting
the
show.
Well, can I say something to everybody who's listening out there?
Please do.
Why mess around, guys? Just get it.
Just get the
just
library.
Get the library. Why mess around? It's good stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Stop pussyfooting around. Just
exactly.
Go. Just put your money where your mouth is. And hey, Jason, thank you very much.
No problem.
And tell your wife, you got to have a great wife. She's
wonderful.
To let you do that. So
let me do that.
Yeah. Was she into it also?
Oh, she's gung-ho about it. She's loving it. We watch the videos.
Praise the Lord. Will
like
you guys
I said,
do
we're
me
arguing about the plot.
Will you guys do me a favor? When you finish reading the plot, mm-hmm. Let's set up a time where we could have a conference call. You, your wife, and me, and I'd like to hear your comments and talk through it.
Well, just let everybody know out there that it's great. We're learning tons. I already listened to the MP3s,
oh.
So now I'm reading it, and she's just reading it right now.
So that gave you a jump on understanding the overview
oh, yeah,
of the
yeah,
Bible.
That's good stuff.
All right. God bless you, Jason.
Hey, you have a great day, all right?
I really appreciate the call. Neat guy. All right, so here we go. The New York Times, November 2nd, 1997. Why They Kill Their Newborns by Steven Pinker. Killing your baby, what could be more depraved? For a woman to destroy the fruit of her womb would seem like an ultimate violation of the natural order. But every year, hundreds of women commit neonaticide. Right? When you kill, neo is something new. So a newborn, neonaticide. They kill their newborns or let them die. Most neonaticides remain undiscovered, but every once in a while, a janitor follows a trail of blood to a tiny body in a trash bin, or a woman faints and doctors find the remains of a placenta inside her. Two cases have recently riveted the American public. Last November, Amy Grossberg and Brian Peterson, 18-year-old college sweethearts, you may remember this, delivered their baby in a motel room and, according to prosecutors, killed him and left his body in a dumpster. They will go on trial for murder next year and, if convicted, could be sentenced to death. That typically doesn't happen, as we'll read later in this article. In June, another 18-year-old, Melissa Drexler, arrived at her high school prom, locked herself in a bathroom stall, gave birth to a boy, and left him dead in a garbage can. Everyone knows what happened next. She fixed herself up and returned to the dance floor. In September, a grand jury indicted her for murder. How could they do it? Nothing melts the heart like a helpless baby. Now, for Steven Pinker to write that sentence, he's a hypocrite, because that's not true for him. But let's continue. Even a biologist's cold calculations, isn't that weird? Why would a biologist have cold calculations? Even a biologist's cold calculations tell us that nurturing an offspring that carries our genes is the whole point of our existence. And actually, no, the point of our existence is to honor God and to enjoy him forever. That's the point of our existence. Neonaticide, many think, could be only a product of pathology, like a mental illness. And he's going to argue that killing an infant is not a mental illness. There's actually good reasons for it, and it should be legal, although he throws us a bone and says, okay, it might be immoral, and we shouldn't forgive it, but it should be legal, and it's certainly not a mental illness, and there are often good reasons for killing your baby. So let's decriminalize infanticide. That's what he's going to argue, just so you know where he's going as we continue. Neonaticide, many think, could only be a product of pathology, mental illness. The psychiatrists uncover childhood trauma. The defense lawyers argue temporary psychosis. The pundits blame a throwaway society, permissive sex education, and, of course, rock lyrics. But it's hard to maintain that neonaticide is an illness when we learn that it has been practiced and accepted in most cultures throughout history. Now, isn't that perverted, twisted logic? Just because something happens doesn't mean it's right or that it should be accepted or that it's not an illness. If there's an illness that has been around throughout history, that doesn't mean it's not an illness. But murdering your child is wicked. It's a sin. It's evil. And so his argument that it's not an illness, he's trying to improve the reputation of women who kill their babies, that it's somewhat acceptable. So he says it's hard to maintain that killing your baby is an illness when you learn that it has been practiced and accepted in most cultures throughout history. Now, I don't know about the most. Certainly, it's been accepted in a number of cultures. I doubt that Steven Pinker could name most cultures throughout history, and that neonaticidal women do not commonly show signs of psychopathology. In other words, they don't seem to be mentally ill, women who kill their babies. In a classic 1970 study of statistics of child killing, a psychiatrist, now listen to this, all right? It's a classic study. A psychiatrist, Philip Resnick, found that mothers who kill their older children are frequently psychotic, depressed, or suicidal when they kill their older kids. But mothers who kill their newborns are usually not. And it was this difference that led Resnick to argue that the category infanticide should be split into neonaticide, the killing of a baby on the first day of its birth, and filicide, F-I-L, like filial, like family, filicide, the killing of a child older than one day. You see how Steven Pinker is gradually bringing the reader into this concept of there might be a period of time after birth when it's also, you know, it's different than actually killing a baby. Killing a baby, and this is where he throws us a bone. The editors of the New York Times who want to feel moral about printing this article that's going to call for, you know, subtly, but call for the legalization of killing babies after they're born. And that's where abortion leads, right? If you can kill a baby before it's born, that's no different than killing it after it's born. It's a minor technicality. Killing a baby, he writes, is an immoral act, and we often express our outrage at the immorality by calling it a sickness. But normal human motives are not always moral, and neonaticide does not have to be a product of malfunctioning neural circuitry or a dysfunctional upbringing. We can try to understand what would lead a mother to kill her newborn, remembering that to understand is not necessarily to forgive. Yeah, not necessarily, but, you know, Steven Pinker, he might forgive, but, you know, you might not, but he would. Martin Daly and Margot Wilson, both psychologists, argue that a capacity for neonaticide is built into the biological design of our parental emotions. In other words, we're all ready to kill our babies. Mammals are extreme among animals in the amount of time, energy, and food they invest in their young, and humans are extreme among mammals. See, if you believe in evolution, that we're just animals, animals eat other animals. So not only, you know, they'll point out that some mammals kill their young. Other mammals eat some of their own species. They eat their children. Dolphins gang rape female dolphins. So when you think you're an animal, you begin to act like an animal and you defend animal morality. Parental investment is a limited resource, and mammalian mothers must decide whether to allot it to their newborn or to their current and future offspring. You get it? If you're a mammal, which human beings are mammals, and you have a baby, you might not want to take time to care for that baby because maybe you're planning to have another baby in a few years. And so you just kill this one and reallocate your resources. If a newborn is sickly or if its survival is not promising, they may cut their losses and favor the healthiest in the litter or try again later on. In most cultures, neonaticide is a form of this triage. That's the word. I apologize. In most cultures, neonaticide is a form of this triage. Until very recently, in human evolutionary history, mothers nursed their children for 2 to 4 years before becoming fertile again. Many children died, especially in the perilous first year. Most women saw no more than 2 or 3 of their children survive to adulthood, and many did not see any survive. To become a grandmother, a woman had to make hard choices. You know what that means, right? You got to decide which of your kids to kill. These are the euphemistic ways that they present these barbarous concepts. In most societies documented by anthropologists, including those of hunter-gatherers, don't liberals love to talk about hunter-gatherers? Our best glimpse into our ancestors' way of life, a woman lets a newborn die when its prospects for survival to adulthood are poor. The forecast might be based on abnormal signs in the infant, or on bad circumstances for successful motherhood at the time. She might be burdened with older children, beset by war or famine, or without a husband or social support. Moreover, she might be young enough to try again. You get that? He's saying, look, throughout history, women have killed their babies, and sometimes it's they just feel like they're too young. They don't want to have a baby yet, so I had a baby, I'll kill it. We are all descendants of women who made the difficult decisions that allowed them to become grandmothers in that unforgiving world. And that's a sick statement that he doesn't know, that all of the human race is descended from mothers who decided to kill their babies. That's a sick statement. And we inherited that brain circuitry that led to those decisions. Daly and Wilson have shown that the statistics, I guess that means all Germans have inherited the brain circuitry that leads to a desire to kill Jews, huh? I guess. All liberals have inherited, all American liberals have inherited the brain circuitry that makes them desire to own black people as slaves, I guess. Isn't that stupid? Daly and Wilson have shown that the statistics on neonaticide in contemporary North America parallel those in the anthropological literature. The women who sacrifice their offspring tend to be young, poor, unmarried, and socially isolated. Well, no kidding, but let's continue. And that was a tend, women who tend to. Okay. Natural selection cannot push the buttons of behavior directly. It affects our behavior by endowing us with emotions that coax us toward adaptive choices. See that killing your baby? It's not evil. It's not a sin. It's an adaptive choice. New mothers have always faced the choice between a definite tragedy now and the possibility of an even greater tragedy months or years later, and that choice is not to be taken lightly. Isn't this perverse that the New York Times published this article to make infanticide sound better and move toward accepting and legalizing infanticide? Let me continue. Even today, the typical rumination of a depressed new mother, how will I cope with this burden, is a legitimate concern. Of course that's a legitimate concern. But, you know, putting a true observation in a huge lie is a way of further deceiving the readers. The emotional response called bonding. Now listen to this, and all the mothers out there will know how perverse this is. This is sick. And obviously, Steven Pinker is not a mother. The emotional response called bonding is also far more complex than the popular view, in which a woman is imprinted with a lifelong attachment to her baby if they interact in a critical period immediately following the baby's birth. A new mother will first coolly assess the infant. Now that's sick. All the new mothers I know are dearly in love with their baby before it's born. All the healthy women in my entire life experience. A new mother will first coolly assess, this is what Steven Pinker says, this is his perverse, feminist, sicko, pro-abortion view of reality. Listen to this. A new mother will first coolly assess the infant and her current, in other words, she has no emotional attachment. She's just coolly, coldly calculating. A new mother will first coolly assess the infant and her current situation, and only in the next few days begin to see it as a unique and wonderful individual. Her love will gradually deepen in ensuing years in a trajectory that tracks the increasing biological value of a child, the chance that it will develop to produce grandchildren, as the child proceeds through the minefield of early development. Even when, and that's sick, because the vast majority of women, all loving mothers, love their baby the moment they know they have a baby, and certainly when the baby is born, they dearly love that baby. And you try to take that baby away, and they will fight to the death for that baby. They're not coolly assessing. Of course, there are sick women, broken women, who want to kill their baby before or after it's born, and there's a continuum from healthy to sick, perverse, evil, selfish. But let's continue. Even when a mother in a hunter-gatherer society hardens her heart to sacrifice a newborn, her heart has not turned to stone. Anthropologists who interview these women or their relatives, since the event is often too painful for the woman to discuss, discover that the women see the death as an unavoidable tragedy. Unavoidable. Sure, they're trying to justify themselves. They grieve at the time and remember the child with pain all their lives. Even the supposedly callous Melissa Drexler agonized over a name for her dead son and wept at his funeral. Many cultural practices are designed to distance people's emotions from a newborn until its survival seems probable. That's sick. Full personhood is often not automatically granted at birth, as we see in rituals like christening. Isn't that sick? He's claiming that a billion Christians, if they go through a christening or a baptism of babies, that's their way of saying it's not a person. He's not only evil, he's also a liar. Let's continue. And yet the recent neonaticides still seem puzzling. These are middle-class girls whose babies would have been kept far from starvation by the girls' parents or by any of thousands of eager adoptive couples. But our emotions, fashioned by the slow hand of natural selection, respond to the signals of the long-vanished tribal environment in which we spend 99% of our evolutionary history. You see, you believe in evolution, you justify any wickedness, including killing infants, killing babies. Being young and single are two bad omens for successful motherhood, and the girl who conceals her pregnancy and procrastinates over its consequences will soon be disquieted by a third omen. She will give birth in circumstances that are particularly unpromising for a human mother alone. In hunter-gatherer societies, births are virtually always assisted because human anatomy makes birth, especially the first one, long, difficult, and risky. You know, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here. Most observers sense the desperation that drives a woman to neonaticide. Prosecutors sometimes do not prosecute. Juries rarely convict. Those found guilty almost never go to jail. Barbara Kerwin, a forensic psychologist, reports that in nearly 300 cases of women charged with neonaticide in the United States and Britain, no woman spent more than one night in jail. In Europe, the laws of several countries prescribed less severe penalties for neonaticide than for adult homicides. The fascination with the Grossberg-Peterson case comes from the unusual threat of the death penalty. Even those in favor of capital punishment might shudder at the thought of the two reportedly nice kids being strapped to gurneys and put to death. No, I, for one, would have executed them with my own hands, given permission from the government. But our compassion hinges on the child, not just on the mother. Oh, isn't that nice of him to concede that? Killers of older children, no matter how desperate, evoke little mercy. Susan Smith, he mentions. The leniency shown to neonaticidal mothers forces us to think the unthinkable and ask if we, like many societies and like the mothers themselves, are not completely sure whether a neonate is a full person. You get it? Hey, this infant is probably not a full person. It seems obvious that we need a clear boundary to confer personhood on a human being and grant it a right to life. Notice he's going to grant the right to life to a living human being. That's what liberals think they can do because they take the place of God. Otherwise, we approach a slippery slope that ends in the disposal of inconvenient people or in grotesque deliberations on the value of individual lives. He is a sick, evil, wicked man. And the New York Times editors published this, that we need to come up with a boundary to know when you have the right to life, and certainly it's not at birth, because after birth, some women might want to kill the baby because they're not ready to be a mom. But the endless abortion debate shows how hard it is to locate the boundary. Anti-abortionists draw the line at conception, but that implies we should shed tears every time an invisible conceptus fails to implant in the uterus and to carry the argument to its logical conclusion that we should prosecute for murder anyone who uses an IUD. Those in favor of abortion draw the line at viability. But viability, that's a lie, but viability is a fuzzy gradient that depends on how great a risk of an impaired child the parents are willing to tolerate. The only thing both sides agree on is that the line must be drawn at some point before birth. Both sides don't agree on that. Have you ever heard of partial birth abortion? The kid's all out of the womb except for his head, and Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, will go ahead and kill the baby. Like Sean Hannity's hero, Rudy Giuliani. He'll kill the baby who's being born. Well, we've run out of time because Bob and Your Life is only a half-hour show. We need a full hour. But one of these days, we'll get a full hour. If you out there keep supporting us, come to Denver Bible Church, learn, enjoy. Come to KGov, our website, kgov.com. Support us there. Hey, this is Bob and Your Life reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.